United States against Orillo. Mr. Olson.
Good morning, Your Honors. I am Mark Olson, and I represent Mary Grace Orillo in this appeal. The foundation of this appeal and the reason that we're here today is based on the testimony of the government's expert witness at the sentencing hearing. The expert, who was well qualified, a man by the name of Brian Cody, a registered nurse, examined audited medical records and billings generated. And his job was to find out how much money in a sample group of patient records. His job was to find out how much money had been taken. His job was not to find out how much had been overpaid. His job was to have a connection to between the amounts taken and the wrongful conduct of Mrs. Orillo. In his opinion, the trial court said that Mr. Cody did an excellent job, which for the most part he did, if it was a civil matter. The trial court embraced his findings and decided that all of the overpayments that Mr. Cody discovered were, in fact, overpayments generated by fraud. The trial court reinforced its position by saying that Nurse Cody or Brian Cody's job was not to find fraud, that his job was strictly limited to, or his charge had been, to find overpayments. There is a substantial difference between an overpayment for a health care service and one that is procured by fraud.
What is the natural rate of overpayment in the absence of fraud?
Probably something in the neighborhood of 20%.
And where does the record show that? I don't understand why the natural rate of overpayment is not zero. There is a natural rate of error, but errors should be normally distributed, which is to say some errors should be in the provider's favor and some errors should be in the payor's favor. If you observe that all the errors are in the payor's favor, that's just the definition of fraud. So if you have, in your terms, an error rate of 20%, 10% of the errors should favor the payor, and 10% of the errors should favor the payee.
That's not what the statistics show, Your Honor.
What statistics are you referring to?
Well, there are ample statistics that have been generated by the Office of Inspector General.
And yes, about the Office of Inspector General thinks that there's a lot of fraud. That would account for an overpayment rate in favor of payees, in favor of providers. It wouldn't say that that's all innocent.
No, it's not. It certainly is not.
So I'm trying to figure out. You say there is an underlying error rate in the absence of fraud, and I'm sure the answer to that is yes. But I'm interested in two things. How we know what that non-fraud error rate is, and two, why that error rate isn't normally distributed so that it nets out to zero.
I cannot answer the latter question. The first question would be dependent upon, first of all, it would be dependent upon the service. Some services it's easier to codify or to identify what part of the overpayment is in fact fraud. For example, the ambulance service, or take durable medical equipment. There are any number of medical services, medical devices, medical expenses that separate themselves.
Yeah, but help me here. Look, if mistaken entries are the issue, wouldn't the mistakes that that resulted in overpayments, and those that resulted in underpayments largely cancel each other out, so that regardless, you know, substantial overpayments would more likely always indicate intentional conduct.
It escapes me how that conclusion can possibly be drawn.
If you have
an auditor that comes in.
Well, I mean, you're arguing that the loss calculation includes innocent errors. But is there any reason to think that innocent errors should skew towards overpayment, you know, rather than including a roughly equal amount of underpayment? I don't see the logic.
He found no underpayment. Well, you and I don't see each other's logic then. Because if somebody comes to me and says, here is a group of payments, and there's a group of errors, and there are overpayments to the provider. But as you look at the medical records, there is no indication of any changes in the records. There's no indication that the defendant did anything. And then all of a sudden, the logical conclusion, without going through a connection, is that's fraud.
Yeah.
I don't know how you do that.
Well, I'll tell you how you do it. Let me explain how you do it.
Okay.
With respect to a category of records that don't contain visible alterations, she would have had to introduce evidence that the amount of overpayments attributable to those records would be consistent with what would be considered statistically normal for a business of its sort. And I don't see that anywhere. So
even if an expert says...
So I'm more logical than you are.
Well, that wouldn't come as a surprise to me.
No.
So what you're basically saying, and you're arguing back to me, is the following. That if there's an overpayment, it is the defendant's job to prove to the Department of Health and Human Services that they didn't wrongfully take the money. And well, the odd part about the statistics, if you go through the record...
Actually, what Judge Rovner and I are saying is identical. It is, there is some basal error rate. That's normal in human behavior. But what is not normal in human behavior is skewness in the error rate. Errors in your favor and errors in the other party's favor should be equally common. And when they're not, the lack of a normal distribution of errors is itself evidence of fraud. This is actually something, if you take a class in statistics, this will be in your first class, how you use the skewness of an error rate to deduce intentional wrongdoing.
If you audit 177 medical records and bills, you will find some underpayments. Nurse Cody found none.
Yes, which is a powerful basis for concluding that they've all been cooked. It's hard to imagine a more powerful basis for that inference.
By finding no underpayments?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And, of course, she admitted that she replaced, you know, whole pages in the medical records and replaced them with new pages with fraudulent entries. You know, we've got that. And you know.
I thought Schroeder required there to be some connection between the loss calculation and the amount of restitution that someone's going to be asked to be paid back. My reading of all the precedent is that there has to be some connection between the loss. It strikes me as very difficult to argue that everything is a loss and there's no connection, but since there's a statistical anomaly, which may or may not exist, everything's fraud.
So on the sample, the 177, where there was this $47,000 finding of error, an overpayment, so what did you challenge in terms of those documents and show that it was innocent, that overpayment, even on that $47,000?
When the auditor said that there's no connection between altered items and the overpayment, and I'm running out of time. When the auditor says that, that is sufficient evidence that that connection doesn't exist to fraud. He's saying there's no connection. What else can he say? We have the files broken down into four areas. You've got 60-some files that everything was correct. You had a number of files that showed $126,000 in overpayments that were clearly due to altered items. You had $140,000 worth of errors which were due to non-altered items. Had nothing to do with whatever it was that the defendant did. I think when you get to the point that you have something that has absolutely nothing to do with what the defendant did, you're at a point where you've got to say, wait a minute, let's recalculate this. That's the government's job at that point. But what the trial court said is, that's all great. We'll take it.
Thank you, Mr. Olson.
I think I'm done.
Mr. Versman.
May it please the Court, I want to lead off by responding to Mr. Olson's point where he claims the auditor said that there's no connection with certain things that she did in fraud. That's absolutely not what the auditor said. Exhibit G has been added to the record on appeal, and what the auditor is saying is that there is a certain category of the overpayments for which he did not find visibly altered documents. On their face. He said it doesn't appear on their face. He's not saying that they're not altered. When you go back and look at the fraud scheme, this defendant admitted to committing a fraud scheme over a period of 3 years. There were 3,300 claims submitted to Medicare, and Medicare was billed $10.3 million. As far as what she admitted to committing, the defendant admitted that she was falsifying the entries on these OASIS forms to make it look like the patients were sicker than they actually were and required greater care than they did. And she stated, and she admitted in her plea agreement, she did this by two methods. Number one, she altered on the face of the documents and checked boxes on these OASIS forms to make it look like the patients were sicker. Then what she also did was substituted entire pages containing fraudulent entries. The analysis that was performed by Nurse Cody found overpayments that were consistent with those admissions that were made by the defendant. Nurse Cody found that there were overpayments that were due to OASIS items that were checked and had been altered on the face of the forms. He also found that there were a substantial number of overpayments based on OASIS items, although they weren't facially altered, they weren't supported by the medical evidence, and they were also inconsistent with other OASIS items. And that's exactly what you'd expect to find based on the defendant's admission that she was substituting entire pages. And then there was a valid statistical extrapolation performed of that analysis that arrived at that $744,000 loss figure. And as Judge Capalla found, that was a conservative figure. It was the low end of the range that was given at the 95% confidence level. Judge Capalla found that figure had been established by a preponderance of the evidence. As far as the defendant's innocent mistakes theory, and I think Judge Rovner was hitting on this, and perhaps Judge Williams as well, the problem with this is there was absolutely no evidence to support this at all. In addition to that, I would point out that the defendant has never argued, either in the district court or here, exactly what those mistakes consisted of. Presumably, and I'm guessing here because there's no evidence of it and no argument of it, I'm presuming that the defense is arguing that the nurses were making mistakes and checking the wrong boxes on their own. And as Judge Capalla acknowledged, yes, it's theoretically possible that you have some mistakes here, but it's implausible to believe, in the absence of any evidence of what's going on in terms of these mistakes, it's simply implausible to believe that these professional nurses, who have nothing to gain by the fraud scheme, are repeatedly making mistakes over and over and over again that are causing Medicare to lose $100,000 or more per year. And I think that kind of goes to Judge Easterbrook, your point about the statistics in this, although I am in no way a statistical expert. If there are no questions, I would simply conclude by asking that the court respectfully affirm the sentence of the district court in this case.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement. Our